Welcome to Linux Matters, a podcast featuring three experienced open source professionals as they discuss the impact Linux has in their daily lives. This is episode 28, recorded on the 9th of April 2024, and I'm Alan. This week, I'll be explaining why I turned our logo upside down.
I'm Mark, and this week I'll be discussing why I haven't migrated Plex to my new server.
And I'm Martin. I'll be jumping directly to Z in the A to Z of modern Linux with a terminal productivity tool for everyone.
I've been fixing the podcast RSS feed.
What was wrong with it?
That is a great question. Well, what was wrong with it is we had two of them. That was the problem. And there's a small backstory to this. But the first thing you need to know, the important takeaway from this is, if you look at your podcast player right now, while you're listening to this show, and the logo is upside down, our logo is upside down, then you're using the wrong RSS feed. And so what you should do is unsubscribe when you finish listening, unsubscribe, and then find the show again in whatever your podcast player is, and you should find one where the logo is the right way up. I'll tell you why in just a moment, but if your logo is the right way up already, everything's fine. But if the logo is upside down, go and find a new feed. So why did this happen? Well, you may or may not be aware that we are podcasting veterans, and we've had a couple of shows before this one. It started 16 years ago and about 29 days as we record this with the Ubuntu UK podcast. And that show ran for seven seasons, and we hosted it on a Bitfolk VPS, MP3 files, OGG files. We did four different media files, large and small, OGG and MP3. It was stupid. And we also had a network of mirrors that we would send all these audio files to, and it was just a bit lunatic and complicated and very silly. So when we rebranded a few years later in season 8, we rebranded to Ubuntu Podcast. So we were no longer Ubuntu UK Podcast, and we got a new domain, ubuntupodcast.org. And for the seasons 8 to 13, we made some changes. And one of the changes we made was we dropped all the mirrors, so we hosted it all ourselves. We rationalized down from four different audio files. I think we end up just doing one audio file, just MP3?
Yes.
We did.
When the MP3 patent expired, we just said, we'll just redirect OGG to MP3.
Yes. So you think you're downloading a freedom-loving format, and we put some, I don't know, steak in your vegan dinner. And so when the show ended, we still had the website, the Ubuntu Podcast website, and all the audio files were still sat on the Bitfolk VPS. And then we decided to start Linux Matters, which is what you're listening to right now. And we were a bit cheeky when we started Linux Matters. We created a whole new website, new RSS feeds, everything new. New way of hosting all the audio files. It's completely different. A new way of deploying the website and everything. Previously, it was all WordPress, and now it's using a static site generator based on Hugo. And we were cheeky because what we did was redirect the old Ubuntu Podcast RSS feed to the new Linux Matters one, because we figured that it's the same three people presenting the show talking about some of the similar kind of things, that our audience would be okay with that, just redirecting it. So if they, you know, people are lazy and they leave their podcast subscriptions the same for years and years and years, and we thought they'll be fine and we'll just redirect them, and that means we'll get an extra bonus audience of all those people who are subscribed to us on Ubuntu Podcast.
And what we learned is people aren't necessarily lazy. Lots of people were living in hope that one day a podcast may turn up in the old Ubuntu podcast feed. And a year and a half later, it did.
Their dreams were answered, yes. And here we are. I'm so sorry. We're not that egotistical. But we were egotistical enough to think people would like to carry on listening, even if the name changed. And that was good because it meant we had a ready-built audience. The downside of that is, for the last year that we've been doing Linux Matters, we've actually had two completely independent RSS feeds entry points, if you like. And the result of that is pretty much everywhere, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms, there's two of us. There's two Linux Matters feeds. One of them is actually using the old Ubuntu podcast feed, which under the covers does a 301 HTTP redirect to the Linux Matters one. And the other one is the real Linux Matters one. And so it looks a bit messy. That's a problem we wanted to solve, was get rid of the mess of having two feeds. But also, at some point, we might want to shut that machine down, and we may not want to carry on paying for the Ubuntu podcast domain, and we may want to just archive it on archive.org. And so I made an executive decision over the weekend that I would fix this. And I think we have, mostly. The way I wanted to do it was draw attention to the fact that you're subscribed to the wrong feed. And we thought of a number of ways to do this. We thought maybe we could record an episode that only went out on that feed, a short one that said, alert, alert, you're on the wrong feed. But we thought that was a bit horrible. So instead, you get an upside down logo.
And this message.
Yes. And this very long message telling you to switch to the other feed. Now, the theory goes that there's now two feeds out there, one up the right way, the correct feed, and one upside down, the wrong feed. And at some point in the future, we will drop the old feed. And so it will eventually disappear off the internet. But we didn't want it to disappear without telling you how to migrate to the new one, because we value your ears. And so we wanted you to carry on listening. So in a nutshell, I did some editing of Nginx config files, and I've handcrafted a very special RSS file, a single XML file that sits on our server, and that XML file only holds this episode. If you subscribe to the old feed, you will only ever get this episode and no more. And so that's another incentive for you to unsubscribe from the upside down and subscribe to the right way up.
Yeah. And so you put our logo through the upside down to net filter.
Actually, I just did, I actually guessed the command line.
Oh, get you.
It was, yeah, convert, which is image magic, and then, you know, the old file name, minus rotate 180, and then a new file name, and that's it. And so a lot of the feeds right now, before this episode goes out, while we're recording this, a lot of the feeds still have both logos up the right way, because it's all cached everywhere. Mm. The theory goes that when we publish this episode that you, dear listener, are listening to right now, the logo will be upside down. That's the theory. So yes, that's the story of what I did to deduplicate our RSS feed and logo all over the place. I hope it works.
I have not been migrating Plex to my new server.
Uh-oh.
Oh dear.
This was a deliberate choice.
Oh.
Okay. Phew.
Yes, yes.
It's a roller coaster already.
This wasn't because I failed to do so. I decided not to, and I shall explain why.
Okay.
So just to briefly recap on my new server setup, I have a new server running on a Wise 5070 thin client, which hosts various services in containers and has an Nginx web server, which acts as a reverse proxy, so each of them can be accessed by their own special subdomain. And Plex is still running like this, except instead of being a container on the same server, it's still on my old server. So you type in the domain for my Plex server, it goes to my new server and proxies to my old server. Fine. However, Plex's main purpose in my household is video streaming, and there isn't enough storage on my new server to store all of my video, because I've got quite a big archive of legitimately format-shifted media.
Understood. Officer.
But as we discussed previously, because my old server draws a lot of power, my plan with this setup was that I don't have the old server on all the time. I just have it on when I need it. So what I wanted was a way of being able to turn it on when it's needed and have it shut down when it's not needed. But it also needs to be a way that is kind of family acceptable, because one of the reasons that we have this Plex server is so that we can play stuff on the TV in the lounge, often for my daughter, who is 4 years old and isn't going to be firing up a command line to type in wake on LAN. And similarly, my partner isn't going to be doing that. She just wants to be able to press a button on the remote and have things happen.
Not with that attitude, you won't.
This is Abney and Teal in the Night Garden on loop playback, I assume.
Mainly, it's The Secret Life of Pets. or animal film, as it's more commonly known in this household. So the way I've done this is in Nginx, if a service is not running, so if the server is off and you try and go there, the way that the proxy works is it generates an HTTP, I think it's a 503 or 504 error. It's a bad gateway is the name of the status. And in Nginx, you can have a custom error handler, which basically says, if you get this error code, serve another page instead. And what I've done is for the page it serves instead, it serves a PHP script. And that PHP script sends a wake on LAN request to my old server and then basically displays a blank page, which will refresh itself until it's available, at which point it'll show you the Plex page. But because of the way that the Plex client on the telly works is when you fire it up and it's, you know, it knows about my Plex server, it will itself send an HTTP request and therefore it will activate the server.
That's nice. Wicked. I would just like to say for the benefit of the listener, when Mark said 503 custom error handler, Alan and I were both making faces indicating we knew where this conversation was going.
Well, I kind of did. I wasn't sure if the answer was going to be a big page with a big button in the middle of it where you press the button or something.
Yes.
Mm. I was fully expecting there to be a Raspberry Pi and a big red button in the lounge that you like hammer the button and it sends a wake on LAN. But all of these things are great. And I think yours is more elegant, obviously.
Yes, totally.
This is the thing. I wanted this to try and be as transparent as possible. So you don't really have to know that anything's happening. You just have to know that you turn it on, you wait a minute and it appears.
And how much did Alan's joy of PHP code influence your implementation of your custom error handler?
Just generally, it's a case of PHP is what I know for doing pages right. Like this. You know, you could do it with Python, but I know less about setting up Python to serve a web page than I do setting up PHP to serve a web page, basically.
Right.
How are you actually triggering the wake on LAN?
It's just using the socket API in PHP to create a UDP socket and send the magic packet to a given MAC address.
Oh, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I would have thought you'd shell out, whatever it is, the wake on LAN thing.
Well, this is the thing, yeah. I wanted it to, because if I did that, then I'd have to actually build a PHP container with wake on LAN available as a shell command. And, you know, this is just a plain upstream PHP container with one script in it, basically.
And did you figure this implementation for the magic packet out yourself, or is there some documented resources on how to do this just natively within like PHP and stuff?
I mean, opening sockets and sending stuff is documented, but the specific implementation, I asked my friend Chatty Jeeps.
Knows everything, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
What about it going back to sleep again?
Ah, so the other time I want it to wake up is when I'm doing backups, because this is still my backup server as well. So now, as well as shoving stuff to the cloud, it will pull stuff from my new server, which I want backed up, and then shove it off to the cloud. And I have a cron job that wakes it up the time of the week I want it to do my backup job. And to shut it down again, I just say at this point every day, which is basically when electricity stops being cheap, turn off. So if it's been turned on during the day, it will stay turned on until nighttime, and then it'll turn off.
Not in the middle of an episode of The Secret Life of Animals, though.
No, not unless my daughter has got up and started watching on her own accord, which hasn't happened yet.
So this is a fabulous solution. I absolutely love it. But I did read with interest today that you can now get a 61.36 terabyte SSD. So you could have just shelled out some many tens of thousands of pounds for one of those and saved yourself, you know, all of this PHP shenanigans.
Yes.
And think of all the power you'll save as well.
Have either of you spotted the fatal flaw in my plan?
No, I like it.
Well, so did I. At first, uh-oh. And then I noticed, wait a minute, my server keeps turning on by itself. What on earth is going on? So I checked my logs, and it turns out all sorts of people call my Plex server's address for no particular reason in the middle of the night in the day, and web crawlers, people trying to find WordPress vulnerabilities and so on. So A small addition to my PHP script was to make it so that it will turn on if it's from a local address, but if it's from a remote address, you have to include a secret phrase in the URL, which was quite easily done.
Right. Nice. I have been dotting around the alphabet in my summary of the A to Z of modern Unix, and we're going to leap all the way to Z today with Z oxide or Zoxide. I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, but that's what we're going to be talking about.
Zoxide, I
guess. No, no. You need to pack that in. Otherwise, I'm going to find you and bring my friend the Oxford English Dictionary and batter you into submission over Zs and Zs.
Okay, Dad.
So, Zoxide, as I shall be calling it now, and we'll have a link to the project in the show notes, is a smarter CD command. And you might remember in episode 10, I talked about Actuin, which was supercharge your history recall and all the rest of it. Well, Zoxide is that, but for CD.
Does CD need supercharging?
So you'd think not, right? Because I've been using CD since the 1980s and it seems perfectly serviceable. But I'll tell you this, give Zoxide a try for a week tops, 2 days minimum, and I think you'll be sold. So this is how it works. It's very simple. You install it. The project makes binaries available. It's packaged in repositories for your favorite Linux and Brew and all of that stuff. And once it's installed, you then need to add something to your shell configuration to initialize it. And then it's part of your shell configuration. That's all documented on the website. It's very straightforward. It's a one-liner in your shell config. And Z, the command Z, single letter, now behaves like CD. So you can Z my documents and you will be deposited in your my documents folder. Or you can type Z space dash and you'll be dropped back one level, or you can do Z tilde and you're in your home directory. So at this point, everything's normal. But once you start using Z to change directory, it builds this waiting system of where you were, where you change directory to, and how frequently you do this. And it calls this algorithm of waiting where you change directory to frecency, which is
God.
An amalgamation of frequency and recency. And it calculates this. And so what happens is that it builds this fuzzy matched path of places you change directory to. So for simple directory changes, maybe not all that useful, but as soon as you start maybe going into .config, name of application, directory path, this then starts to accelerate. So for NeoVim, for example, you can now start typing Z NeoVim and it will drop you into that directory directly. Or, in my case, I have my Nix configuration in the directory /0/nix-config. So now I can just type Z nix-config and I go directly there. But better than that is I can now type Z nix, because that fuzzy match for the most frequent destination I go to is that path. So I have all of my source code organized in this development tree, and I can now hop into any project just by the project name, not by the full directory path.
So a couple of things. One, for the listener, every time you hear in the last few minutes and probably the next few minutes, Martin say the letter Z, he looks down at his keyboard and points to it with his index finger.
I just do.
So you know, right?
I like to check it's there.
It's been great to watch. And secondly, I've used Fish, I think, in the past. Mm-hmm. And I got in a bit of trouble because it tried to be smart and send me to the right places. And for some reason, there are some directories on my system that have the same name. Mm-hmm. And I did a CD to somewhere and I did something and it did the wrong thing in the wrong place or the right thing in the wrong place. And I found that quite frustrating. And that was when I rage quit using Fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was trying to be too clever and that frustrated me. And I don't know if years of muscle memory will make me do the same thing with Z.
Okay. So I have a couple of answers to that point, because you make a good point. The first is that Fish's CD history is just command line history. So it doesn't have the nuance of how often you change to these directories. And it's always the full path rather than just these broken up paths. So if you think of something like my nixconfig is in 0 nix-config, I could type z space 0 space nix. And it will work out like the path to be in with more clues. So you can be as verbose or as short as you like. But also that frequency has aging. So over time, if you've stopped working on a project, that starts to drop down the list, gets unbalanced from the priority, and the places that you're going to more regularly become the places that it will favor based on the name matching. But here's the real kicker. All the way through this, and I'm sure listeners have been thinking, Zed, I'm not sure I want to put up with the overhead of the muscle memory of having to relearn CD as Zed.
And move all that distance from the C and D keys.
Right, indeed. So what you can do is when you add that line to your shell RC to initialize Zed, you can tell it which command prefix you want it to replace. So you can say init cd, and now it will bind z to cd. So now you continue typing cd just as you always did, and it's constantly learning and waiting and balancing every time you use it. This also has the added benefit that when you SSH to a machine which doesn't have Zoxide installed, you can still use CD and you don't have that sort of cognitive overhead of where do I have this tool available.
What happens in shell scripts? You know, I know you, you're a shell script aficionado, and I am, you know, a Padawan to your master or whatever. I've written the odd shell script. What happens there?
Well, two things. Should be using CD in your shell scripts. You should be using pushd and popd. But as it happens, the invoking of Zoxide or Zoxide is an interactive shell only context. So you can have it enabled for the organic humans, but your shell scripts will still respond to CD in the usual way.
I am going to audit all of your shell scripts to see if any of them have got CD.
Please do.
You will not be getting pull requests to change them to pushd and popd.
And earlier you said, what if it suggests something that I don't like anymore? Well, there's a couple of extra tools with Zoxide. One, you can say Z or CD add and a path, and that will bump it up the weightings quickly without you having to change directory. You can also run a remove to say, actually, I went to this directory and it's got a distinctive name, but I don't want that auto matching. So just yank it completely. And you can query. And like Atuin, this has an interactive mode. It does require an additional tool, FZF, to be installed.
Yes.
But if you now type ZI, or if you've bound to the CD command, CDI, you now get a ordered list, and you can actually do a visual navigation of this is all of the CD places I've been to. So if you've forgotten and you want a prompt to, I know I've got this project called Winkle somewhere, you can CDI, start typing Winkle and find it and jump directly in there.
Superb. I think I might have to give this a try. After you mentioned Atuin, I've now got that on everything, although I don't have it up to date because I can't remember how I installed it, so I can't remember how to update it.
Let me tell you about Nix.
Well, I've recently discovered that someone is making a snap of Atuin, and I'm like, oh, brilliant. It solves the problem for me, not remembering how on earth I installed this thing. But that's just a personal Popey problem. So wonderful.
Yep, I think Zoxide is something everyone can take advantage of, so give it a try.